Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Jason Daphnis? Now that's what I call a super producer. You can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. I don't care who you are, where you're from, what you did. Kids is spelled with a Z. Also joining us today is a very special returning guest, Seth Zarate. Seth, how are you holding up out there?
I'm doing good. Really excited to talk about basic top 40 music. Oh, no swears. I'm so sorry.
Cha-ching!
Very basic top 40 music as it relates to Hey Arnold. So excited for that. You can find me online at SN Zarate.
Beautiful. And yeah, this is sort of if you didn't already get a sense of it from the opening jams there, this is a special episode today. And to explain more about it, I will turn to Harry. Harry, let us know what is happening.
Hey, thanks, Cody. Yeah, so we tend to do one sort of special episode per season. You know, we did the mythology episode the astrology episode in season one. And when I was looking for what I wanted to pick, because Cody picked season two, Emily picked season one, I noticed that the first Now That's What I Call Music came out in 1998, the same year that season three of Hey Arnold, which we just finished, came out. So I decided that what we're going to do, I enlisted our great friend Seth, who is sort of a 90s music expert. Or would you call yourself an expert, Seth, or would you merely say an enthusiast?
Enthusiast.
Okay,
expert would probably be 80s.
80s? 80s, yeah. Honestly, maybe a better era to be in. Anyway, we're gonna go down the list of the 17 tracks that were on. Now That's What I Call Music. No suffix. It's just one. I don't even think they said one. I think it literally just says Now That's What I Call Music, which is crazy to me. And we have a super producer who literally makes music podcast, Jason. It's called Crossfade. It's really good. You should check it out. And he's going to pipe in some of the music for us to aid in our discussion. So we're going to do a lightning round, top to bottom, just sort of like high-level quick thoughts about how this music makes us feel, maybe any memories we have associated with the music, because there were some tracks on here for me personally that were startling to revisit and really woke some things up that I hadn't thought about for a very long time. So that's what we were thinking. Is everybody ready to jumpstart the Now That's What I Call Music lightning round?
I think so.
Can't wait.
All right. So, Jason, I think we're starting out with track number one, which is Janet Jackson's Together Again.
There are times when I look.
This was one of those songs where the minute that I heard it, I instantly recalled every instance of hearing it. You know what I mean? Which is maybe true of a lot of the songs on here, but like in every grocery store, in every swimming pool, in every sort of like thing I went to with my parents because my parents were dragging me along to errands, this song was ubiquitous, I think. Mm-hmm. And not without reason. It's kind of a banger.
Yeah. This song really evoked an era for me of childhood, like you said, where like this memory that would always replay would be after school. I hated going to school as a kid.
Of course.
I would stay up late specifically to avoid going to sleep because that felt fast forward into school the next day. My parents would take us shopping. And like whenever we would leave, it would be nighttime and the radio would be on. And I just have these songs that play in my head of like the car ride home.
Yes.
And I'm just kind of like, oh, the inevitable night is coming. And I have to go to school. And this is one of the songs. But separate from that, the 90s were just like a really awesome time for like black women making really good dance music.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're gonna see that again and again on this album specifically, right? Is that like there are a bunch of girl groups on this CD, and like, just, you're right, like in general, Destiny's Child and Janet Jackson, it's like really good, like specifically clubbing music is like, because this is such a club banger, this song.
Yeah, I know it's around the same time, but it reminds me a lot of Tamia's So Into You, which like evokes the same feeling. It's like, it just feels so good.
Yeah. The one thing, my one criticism of this song is that I was trying to figure it out the whole time I was listening, and I think that Everywhere You Go is like exactly from Full House, which came out, which would have been airing around the same time, right? Like, that's just the Full House theme song. Everywhere you go. I mean, I guess the last chord is a little bit different, but I was like, because the whole time I was like, that sounds so familiar. I don't know, did you guys pick up on that, or did it sound like something else to you?
I didn't pick up on that. I admittedly don't have as much of I don't have as much mileage with this song, but like listening to, like, I guess full disclosure, I listen to the Now CDs a lot, this one included, but I didn't listen to them cover to cover. I usually skip track one to get to track two, which, hey, we'll get to, but hearing this song again in preparation for this, it like felt like a formative song, in so much as like I definitely heard this on the radio and just didn't commit it to memory, but like it's there somewhere, everywhere I look, or whatever the phrase is.
Jason has informed me in the comments that it, in the Full House theme, it's Everywhere You Look, whereas this is Everywhere You Go. So apologies to Janet Jackson, the least problematic Jackson, and I still had to try to come for her. I'm sorry. Should we move on to number two? Cody, I think you said that song number two is the one that you skipped to, right?
Yeah, I usually skip my Discman ahead. It's not a Discman, it's a Walkman, right? I skip my CD ahead to track number two if we wanted to bring that one in. I already kind of spoiled what it was at the top of the episode.
What's your background with this one? This all-time boy band classic.
Yeah, well, I guess if we wanted to start piping in the opening notes here. The name of the song, I guess I should say, is As Long As You Stoop Kids. I mean, As Long As You Love Me by Backstreet Boys. And I think this was maybe my preferred, like, in the area of girl groups, era rather, of girl groups and boy groups, Backstreet Boys is probably, like, my leaning sort of preference.
You were a Backstreet Boy.
Yeah, I was more of a Backstreet Boy. My first CD ever was Millennium, which is not the CD which this track came from. But I don't know. It got lots of plays for me on this particular CD, and definitely on Rochester's pop radio. And I was like, in my head, because I usually skipped ahead to this song, I have that sort of like muscle memory, if that's the right phrase, of like starting this CD with this song, like those that dun 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 dun, even though it doesn't actually start with those. Backstreet Boys, extremely formative for young me.
Hell yeah. I mean, I think that by the time this song came out and I was listening to it, I was already in a punk sort of like contrarian phase, where I was like, I'm not going to like the Backstreet Boys because the people I don't like at school like the Backstreet Boys. But like Seth said about the mall songs, like we always, my dad would drive us to school and we would just listen to whatever was on the radio, like KDWB if you're here in Minnesota, or like Radio Disney if you remember Radio Disney. And like when this song came on, I definitely went through sort of like a internal crisis where I was like, I am bopping to this. It is a bop. Like, I'm feeling it and I don't want to be, but you can't really resist. I mean, I think this might be the most 90s of all 90s songs, right?
It's up there for sure.
Yeah.
I know that the first time I heard this song was, there was that era of Disney where they would play music videos.
Yes.
And so they played this music video. And if I recall correctly, like, this might have been their first music video where it shows them all singing, like, you know, like a bust, like chest up, and they keep morphing into each other. And when I was, you know, six, I was like, this is the most surreal thing I've ever seen. This is,
oh my God,
this is art.
I didn't know that. I mean, that suggests a sort of like meta understanding of the boy band aspect that is quite
who you are. Yeah.
Also, this song is about being in love with a criminal that's on the run, it seems. Because, like, I thought it was generic, right? But they keep saying things like, at one point they say, like, I don't care if you're on the run. I don't care what you've done as long as you love me. It's like, wait a minute. It's like, are one of the Backstreet Boys in love with, like a murderer or something?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, man. This definitely was a formative song for me because contrary to your contrarianism, I was all in, specifically because the girls that I had crushes on in elementary school liked the Backstreet Boys. So I was like, I gotta know, I gotta like this stuff. And probably, like, yeah, started the beginning of 2.5 decades of heartache. So
yeah, well,
hats off to the Backstreet Boys for that.
I mean, 100% same, right? That the only difference was that the girls I had a crush on didn't like me and were mean to me, and that made me like them more in ways that I was not prepared to unpack as an 8 or 9 year old. And so I had a very contentious relationship with said Beastie Boys, Backstreet Boys. If it was Beastie Boys, I would be getting down right now. All right. Emily, what do you think about the Backstreet Boys?
Yeah, I was pretty into the Backstreet Boys as a kid. I remember getting this CD from the used CD store in Milwaukee. But I was more of an NSYNC head, I guess.
Oh, and wow.
That was my second concert I ever went to.
Was NSYNC?
But they're both, they kind of, there was the whole thing of like, what, how you always have to have a competition between artists, so it was like you were supposed to choose a side between Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, but I liked them both. They're great. Good boy bands.
Good boys. What was your favorite NSYNC song?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
That's fair. I think the only one I remember is Mbop, which is different from Mpop, which is on here. Or did that have a different name? What am I thinking of?
So Pop is the NSYNC song, Mbop, yes. We will get to.
Yes, spoilers. And we should move on now, right? Because the next song we've got is The Way by Fastball, which is not a song I remembered at all. Cody, did you remember it?
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, that is The Way by Fastball at track number 3. Yeah, I remember this song a whole bunch. Again, Rochester pop radio, it made its rounds late 90s, early 2000s. Played a lot. I can think of my mother and my father playing the radio and like taking me to daycare, you know, early. Just,
oh, wow.
You know, young elementary school me. That's just a weird like memory attachment I have to this song. And there are a handful of songs by Fastball that you really have stuck with me from the 90s to now. And a few of them are still on like road trip playlists that I put together for myself. You're an Ocean is one that I still listen to. I told somebody the other day that You're an Ocean was in the movie Johnny Tsunami. If we're just,
oh, wow.
Right? Again, we're deep in nostalgia mode, but I hope that's correct. But yeah, Fastball weirdly holds a high place in my shelf of childhood memories.
I really like this song. I was surprised. I like, by the time we got to track three and I started to hear a white dude who definitely has a goatee singing, I was like, okay, now we're hitting the music that I remember from the 90s. This sort of like butt rock, sort of like Santana smooth Matchbox 20 style music. But then like, this is a really good, like, it's a minor chord progression. Listen to this. I really like that chorus. It's like really a banging chorus. And also like, it's a song about like an old couple that are like deciding to die by just sort of driving off into the horizon, which I think is like a really evocative and interesting like subject matter for a song. I don't know. I was really surprised by this one. I was like, I'm grooving to Fastball. What did you think, Seth?
I'm realizing, like, as we talk about these things, that I have never actually, paid attention to the lyrical content of these songs.
Why would you?
A few notable exceptions later in the track list.
Excellent.
And so I would just pay attention to the chorus. And I know I shared this in real life, but I'll share it with the pod. Like, my first exposure was going on a road trip to the Mall of America from Moorhead, Minnesota. And in my, like, six-year-old brain, I was like, we will never get there. Like, this was pre-MapQuest. We had, like, a paper atlas. And I was just like, this road trip will never end. I will never see home again.
Yes.
And this was on the radio.
That's so good. Because, like, I remember listening to music like this on my way from Plymouth, Minnesota to Wisconsin Rapids to see my grandparents. And that's, like, back in the day, that was like a 4-hour drive or something. So not long by any like reasonable metric, but like as a kid, it really felt like I'm going to be a different human being by the time we arrive at this destination than I was when we started out. And it was music like this that sort of like heralded that transition from childhood to later childhood, 4-hour later childhood. So I totally resonate with that. Emily, do you remember this song at all? Because I didn't, even though I kind of like it.
Yeah, I remember the chorus. I didn't remember it at first, but then when you get to the chorus, this definitely made its rounds on Milwaukee radio stations back in the day. So I remember not knowing any of the lyrics, but that melody is great. The
da-na-na-na,
da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na- loop. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, like, another 90s sort of trend of, like, vaguely culturally appropriative music. I don't even know necessarily what culture this is appropriating, except that it sounds, like, kind of, like, bluesy, like, southern. But we're going to see more of that soon. So stay tuned, I guess. Should we move on? Are we done with Fastball? Let's go on to, we're on the fourth track, which is Flagpole Sitta by Harvey Danger. Another song that I unfortunately didn't remember until I started listening to it, and then I very, very much remembered it. What did you think, Cody?
This was a song that was in the movie Dickie Roberts, former child star, starring David Spade, a movie that is not good and that I watched a lot of times in my youth. But the song was in it. It plays over sort of a satisfying montage sequence towards like the third act. I'm hesitant to spoil Dickie Roberts, but also it's Dickie Roberts. It's impossible to spoil. But then that coincided really nicely with me discovering it on the CD. I can't remember if I just found Now That's What I Call Music Volume 1 or whatever we want to call it. If I discovered it later, that was always like a track that I skipped. I can't quite remember the placing, but that was a song, yeah, that I guess got a lot of plays outside of this CD and outside of like pop radio at the time. But I definitely remember this song, and it is certainly an earworm.
Yeah, it really... It's one of those things, right, where, like I said, like I haven't thought about this song in 15 years, right, or 20 years probably now that I'm old as hell. But, like, as soon as I heard it, I, like, oh, I know it. I know every word of this song, right? Like, I can like, follow the chorus entirely because it's, like, bound up in my DNA because I heard this song so many goddamn times every single place I went. Also, it's good that you brought up the movie because... I feel like this song was in every other movie that I saw in the 90s, and I'm sure that's not true, but like it sounds like a song that's in a bunch of movies, right? Like the first scene of a movie when like it's like the Pest with John Leguizamo when he's like getting ready and stuff. That's not the song that plays in that movie, but you know what I mean. Also, like, lyrically, this song is interesting because it's all about like boredom, which I feel like was a major preoccupation for like the people of the 90s. It's just like, I'm not sick, but I'm not well is like the big line here. And it's just like, yeah, I'm unhappy and I don't know why, because there's no reason to really be unhappy because I'm a white kid from the suburbs, right? But like something about that really resonates, I guess. I guess the other, oh, I really liked the lyric, "The voices in my head are snoring," also. Pretty good lyric. Just wish that he didn't hold his nose while singing through this song, is what it sounds like. What was up with that? Seth, do you know anything about, like, why did everybody have to whine so bad in the 90s?
This was, I guess, like, after the internet bubble burst, the dot-com bubble. So people were upset, I guess.
Uh-huh.
This was the first song that I didn't recognize, similar to what you guys mentioned. I didn't hear this growing up. I heard it sort of after the fact, most likely in Dickie Roberts and most likely in American Pie. I looked up where the song's been featured. So when I heard it, I was like, there's something familiar about this, but I don't recall it. And then knowing that it was featured in those movies, I think, is where I got exposed to it.
And the next one is Say You'll Be There by the Spice Girls. So we're really getting in there now. We are deep in the 90s now because the Spice Girls were absolutely ubiquitous. There's a lot going on in this song. Was what kind of surprised me about it. Cody, what do you have specific memories of the Spice Girls or of this song specifically? Or what do you think of this one?
The Spice Girls did not hit my like my own personal like cultural radar. I think probably, I mean, just to shed some light on my own personal leanings and circles and, you know, family influences or whatever, it was probably not as cool in my circles to be like all about girl groups. But I did know that the Spice Girls existed. I hear some of their songs now and I definitely see the appeal. They're fun as heck. This is not a song that I remember particularly well. It didn't strike me as sort of one of the, you know, when the Spice Girls crossed my path, this isn't a song that I remember as being, I guess, one of the ones that hit me more often. But you know, hey, it bops from what I can tell, and you know, their influence lives on, probably, right? Like, it seems like y'all are pretty big Spice heads. Am I wrong?
I'm not a big Spice head. I feel like, similarly to you, Cody, I think just generally it was assumed that I would have an adversarial relationship with the Spice Girls because girls had cooties, and I was in, you know, like, what, the second grade? So I didn't listen to a lot of Spice Girls, but man, listen to that chorus, though. I mean, it's pretty irresistible. Come on. Like, it's really an earworm. They do that great, like, electronic thing that I'm butchering. My other big takeaway from this song is that there is a Stevie Wonder harmonica solo in it. Presumably it's not actually Stevie Wonder playing the harmonica, but I was really struck by the fact that because it's like, it's the Spice Girls. Like, I thought the voice was sort of like the real big takeaway from this song, and the rest of the music was perfunctory. But like right on the bridge, they don't sing at all, and there is this like long ass harmonica solo, and I was like, who put this in the song? I don't know. Like, I mean, I didn't dislike it, but it felt like such a weird bit. But I think that it's really like demonstrative of all of the weird little instrumentations that we're going to see throughout this episode. Seth, what did you think of the Spice Girls?
Similar to you. Like, I was familiar with the Spice Girls. I knew about them, but I think I fell in the like girls have cooties camp. So I knew. I know I've heard this song. I do think If You Want to Be My Lover is probably my number one Spice Girl song. Spice Up Your Life is up there too. But it was nice to revisit this.
They're playing the harmonica solo right now. Do you hear that? Emily, were you a Spice Girls person?
I liked all the hits. I'm sad to hear all of you would avoid them completely and avoid girl groups completely. Spice Girls still hold it down, and I will be adding this to Road Trip playlist. So,
hell yeah.
Also, the music video, they're dancing around a desert with like a metal, shiny metal sheet thing, decorative shiny stuff on. So it's pretty great.
That sounds great. Yeah, I mean, again, you know, like we have to apologize. We were like 8 or 9 years old, and girls did have cooties back then in 1998. So, gotta be fair about that. Should we move on? Are we done talking about the Spice Girls? Yeah, let's do it. Now this one is one that I know Seth is ready for. We've got All My Life by Casey and JoJo. And will you start us off, Seth? What did you think of this one?
This song, I got really into like late 90s, early 2000s R&B. So Casey and JoJo, All My Life, this, oh man, I didn't really know it as a kid, but I will say like a little bit later, I have listened to a lot of Casey and JoJo like during high school breakups.
Nice.
And I have definitely like just bawled my eyes out in the shower screaming the lyrics to this song, especially it's later in the song and this is a very long song, so we're probably not gonna get
so
to it
long.
But where the guy just sings like I really love you all my life, and then somebody's like baby,
I
was a huge fan of this song. This brought back a lot of memories. Something about just like how heartfelt that they decided like, oh yeah, the late 90s are a great time for these just like heart-wrenching ballads. I love it. Like big fan for an emotional child and teenager.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Because like I think that like you can almost see where sort of like the deep, disgusting sort of irony cynicism of the mid to late 2000s came from, because like even sarcasm in the 90s worked differently. We're like, we're gonna see some sarcastic songs on this CD, but like most of the songs and even the sarcastic songs have this sort of like very clear delineation between irony and sincerity. And then there are songs like this, which is like, I cannot believe that something this earnest was ever popular, you know? Because like now I'm growing up in like, or growing up in like the mid 2000s, it was like, this was like, if you were ever this like down bad openly, you were just going to be mocked, right? Like this is a song that like, even listening to it now, I'm like, wow, like these guys are in their feelings. And like, not afraid to be messy as hell. There's the lyrics in this song are so messy.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of do too, but it really is like it's a bygone era, right? Where it's like, I just don't think you can be this sort of like straight up anymore, because like we need to be more guarded. I don't know. What do you think of this one, Cody?
I guess in short, this song and Casey and JoJo have another track in the Now franchise of CDs. Now That's What I Call Music Volume 6, I believe. They have Crazy. Those two got a lot of spins from me. And I guess this is a long song. All My Life is it's a radio edit that's on the first CD. I can't remember how exactly they cut it down. I know that great introduction is cut down on the album, which is kind of a shame, but yeah, a lot of for apropos of nothing, like this doesn't gravitate toward like a lot of the other sorts of music that I would have as a kid, but for some reason this song really stood out to me, and I felt the need to listen to it a ton.
Yeah, you guys just remember being like literally like 6 years old and listening to songs like these and being like, I feel heartbroken, like my heart is, and like I've experienced the torment of a thousand lifetimes in this moment, and it's like, what are you talking about, you 6 year old child, you can't even read. I I will say my favorite lyric from this is when he says, "You're close to me like my father." I'm like, what is that's a weird thing to say to somebody that you're like crushing on. But anyway, yeah, great song. In a lot of ways, a wild time. We should move on to another girl group, I think, next up, right? We've got Never Ever by All Saints. This is another song that completely missed me. And it's very, very funny because it starts with that 10 things I hate about you, like monologue type thing where they keep doing couplets. We can listen to them now.
How you could ever hurt me so. I need to know what I've done wrong and how long it's been going on.
This song missed me too. I meant to look up the band and see if they made some songs that I did give more listens to, but for whatever reason this one missed me completely. I like the sound of it though.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, like, I don't like the chorus at all because it's just Amazing Grace. They're just singing a worse song of Amazing Grace over Amazing Grace, which is like, come on, guy. Like, can you do that? I don't know. I do really like this 10 Things I Hate About You, or like Farah from A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. I really love this opening where they're just talking. Also, just the fact that it's just a really messy breakup song. That was just what the 90s were about. It's just like, I got broken up with and I feel awful and I'm trying to figure out why. That was what was preoccupying the American psyche. Seth, was your psyche similarly preoccupied?
So this was the first track on here that I have never heard before.
Oh, wow.
Ever. Some of the other songs, you know, they had distant memories attached to them. And I could like, oh yeah, I think I've heard this, but this was the first track on here that I don't think I have any connection to at all or experience with. And yeah, like it is a very kind of, that slowed down R&B, like in your feelings, hard on your luck, earnest core thing you talked about. So I didn't mind it. But this was like the first time I've ever listened to it.
Yeah, really weirdly childish lyrics in a lot of these songs, but especially in this one, like, when are you going to take me out of this black hole? When are you going to take me out of this black hole? It's like, okay, bars, I guess? I don't know. Emily, what did you think of this one?
I don't know this one either. Yeah. I like the spoken word intro.
Yeah, it's great. You gotta love girl groups, right? I feel like girl groups are not a big thing. We recently saw Michelle open for Mitski, and it was really wild to see a girl group come back, and it felt like a real 90s throwback, which is just to say, like, that was really a thing, was both boy and girl groups, and sort of like, maybe gender delineation in the 90s? I don't know. Weird stuff. But also, a lot of very earnest, very in-your-feelings-ness across both gender lines, which that's kind of cool. We should move on, because now we've got, like, an insanely, like, earworm memorable song that I think it's another one where, like, without even hearing it, I remembered it immediately. That's If You Could Only See by Tonic, which is a really good example of a lot of what we've been talking about, just wildly in your feelings, sort of like, I hesitate to call it an emo song because it's not that angsty and it's more radio friendly, but it really is like dopey crybaby music in kind of the best way. Seth, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, similarly, I don't think I listened to it growing up or as a kid when it first came out, but a little bit later. I have very fond memories of playing, I don't remember the specific title, but like a PlayStation 2 era karaoke game.
Nice.
And this was one of the tracks. This and another, I think, 90s song, I'll Be by Edwin McCain, were like two of my go-tos.
Amazing.
I could like sing on the hardest difficulty and get almost a perfect score every time. I do enjoy this song quite a bit, and I agree. Very just maudlin.
Maudlin is a great word for it.
Yeah.
Cody, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, this is, I remember this song pretty well also from listening to it as a kid. And like it's on, you know, whenever it comes up on my iPod, RIP, by the way. But I would listen to it and think about it again and would think, oh, yeah, this is like a mid-2000s song. But it's not. It's, you know, late 90s. Mm-hmm. And it, a song like this and a band like this really, like, listening to it again or earlier today made me think of bands like Three Doors Down and Fuel that sort of came after this. And I don't know, the sort of mapping of that is fascinating to me. The sort of like soft pop rocky sort of energy that you get from this feeding into, you know, the influences of the early to mid to later 2000s. So yeah, I don't know. A fun little data point and I think a nice inclusion on this album.
And there are slide guitars in it, and it's in minor, which those are two things that work for me well. Yeah, I think that for me, it's just a little bit too sort of like, I mean, Jason just put in the chat some of the lyrics. Seems the road less traveled shows happiness unraveled, and you got to take a little dirt to keep what you love. That's what you got to do. It's like everybody in the 90s was on that beat, right? It was like, look, man, like, we're serious about this. Love is worth fighting for, and we're going to be really, really straight up about it. Hearts on our sleeves. Emily, do you remember this song?
I remember it because I really hate this type of singing. Anytime a guy is whining in whiny voice sing-song land, it's... I think guys still do this in maybe more emo world of music, but yeah, not a fan. Really, really hate hearing it.
It is like a real wine rock soundtrack, and I that's with an H. It's not wine rock, which would be, I don't know what that would be. Maybe I don't know. Anyway, yeah, I think that like this is not, this is a very like, it's the closest thing to butt rock on this album, which we're not really there, but we're getting there. We're starting to see it come together, which is why maybe it sounds like a mid-2000s to you, Cody. Also, we should note that this was written, the singer was 21 years old and he was dating someone much older than he was, and his parents were disowning him because of it. And so he wrote this song to them to be like, listen, like, this is how I feel, which is like a perfect sort of encapsulation of what this song's all about.
It makes it simultaneously so much better and so much worse.
Yeah. And speaking of so much worse, we're on to the next song, which is Mbop by Hanson. Maybe the most quintessentially 90s song. And I know I've said that a lot, but I think unquestionably Hanson has to be it, right? Like, man, this song. Seth, what do you got? Like, how do you feel about Hanson and specifically Hanson's anthem?
Yeah. So earlier when you talked about sort of this like burgeoning just rejection of popular culture, this and Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba fill me with just like this visceral ire where I'm just like, even then I was just like, I don't like this song. I don't like the people who like it. I don't want to be like them. It really turned me off. I mean, like listening to it, I gave myself the permission to listen to it and enjoy it. And it's an upbeat song and like it's well made, but I have this very visceral emotional attachment to it.
That's so funny because I think both me and Cody put our mouths agape. I think you said you're one for two, Cody. I'm the same way. I'm like, you can't come after Tub Thumping. When you get knocked down, you get back up again. It's an anthem. But I agree with you about this song. Cody, what do you think about this? And Tub Thumping, I guess.
Yeah, first and foremost, justice for Chumbawamba, justice for Tub Thumping, a song that I still have on rotation in my workout and running playlists. Hey, I get knocked down all the time, but you know what I do? You know, fill in the blank. I don't like this song, though. I wasn't huge on it at the time. I didn't really... Hanson was another craze that didn't really crash into my cultural... like collective radar. That just didn't really happen. I knew they existed. Listening to this song as an older person, maybe just weary from the world, I did not have the time nor patience to entertain. It's a nonsensical song, even more so than the title would suggest. You can't understand what anybody's saying.
No, it sounds like vaporwave, right? Like it really sounds like they cut and chopped and screwed a song that actually had lyrics into something that doesn't. And yeah, I like... just like, especially I don't know. Hanson always struck me as sort of like a really cynical attempt to create a Jackson 5 in the lab. You know what I mean? It's like, we're going to get these cute white kids. They're all 11 years old. We're going to have them learn to play their own instruments and like pretend that this music was written by them. And listen, isn't it fun? Don't you want to listen to it on the radio? Don't you want to throw money at it? I don't know. I'm not a Hanson guy. I'm with you, Seth. I mean, the annoying thing though is that like, in terms of like corpo pop, this is unquestionable, right? It's like it is stuck in your head right now. It will be stuck in your head for the rest of the day. It's like they cracked the algorithm for how to get an earworm embedded, and they were successful. Unfortunately, for all of us. Emily, what did you think of Hanson? Were you the world's biggest Hanson fan?
My older cousin was deeply in love with Hanson, so I thought of them more in terms of, okay, she's a few years older than me, and they were more her era. But their boy bands from that time were bops, nothing but bangers and bops, so.
Wow, and bops, that's...
It was hard.
That's fascinating, because you're right, there was this sort of, like, the really creepy thing about boy bands for me has always been, like, This idea that, like, we are going to create heartthrobs for teenagers that are also teenagers, but, like, the people making money off of this parasocial relationship are adult record executives. You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, man, that kind of creeps me out. But, yeah, just listen to it. Now it's stuck in your head forever. Sorry, listeners. We're moving on to the next song. And boy, oh boy, are we in the crap now, everybody, because the next song is Zoot Suit Riot by none other than the Cherry Poppin' Daddies. Oh boy, a highly memorable instance. Cody, do you have fond memories of the Cherry Poppin' Daddies?
You bet I do. I am sick of saying the phrase got a lot of spins from me, because I don't know if that's actually a thing, but the song got a lot of spins from me on the CD player, on the radio. The apparent like swing revival of the 90s was something that I could not really comprehend, or like it was not particularly applicable to me as a child growing up in the 90s, but this song and the movie Swingers, which I watched later in life, led me to believe that that happened and was a thing. But
it absolutely did.
Yeah, but like this song, Brian Setzer Orchestra, all those guys, they occupy a fond spot in my heart. I'm never going to forget this song.
Seth, what did you think?
This, I think, with All Saints, Never Ever, was the other song that I have no recollection of.
You missed this song, really?
Yeah. The one thing it did, though, it reminded me of another 90s gem, The Mask.
Yeah.
And the scene where Jim Carrey as The Mask is wearing a zoot suit dancing with Cameron Diaz. And then right after that, the whole Cuban Pete sequence, which is like iconic to me. So some of that emotion spilled over, and I was like, this is the first time I've ever hearing it, but I don't dislike it. And yeah, like my toes were a tapping.
That's so funny. I loathe this song. Sorry, Cody. It's like the opening to Cuphead, where it's like this mockery of like New Orleans big band jazz and swing music. It honestly sounds like a parody song that he wrote to make fun of black people in a lot of ways to me. And like, also it's about the Zoot Suit Riots, which were when Latinx people were assaulted by white Los Angeles residents, but like, it's not anti that. Like, it's not a political commentary. So it's just like, is it just a celebration of the Zoot Suit Riots, or like, what is going on with this song? I don't know. I really hate this song. I'm sorry, Cody. I like that there are horns in popular music, though. So that's one thing. But yeah, it sounded like what if the Dead Kennedys were a ska band? And also, if they didn't have any political opinions, it would sound something like this. And it's like, that sounds like the worst band of all time to me. Emily, what did you think of the Cherry Poppin' Daddies?
Yeah, I don't know this song. Not a fan of it.
That's fair. Yeah. It's weird, right? It's like really a strange chapter of the late 90s. But you're right, Cody, like, I think that the singer has said that, like, this was supposed to be a ballad for the swing revival. So, like, they were thinking about it. The swing revival was, like, percolating in the minds of the musicians of the late 90s, or at the very least, this guy. But now we're done with this song, thankfully, and we're moving on to something a little bit more, perhaps, some of our speeds, and it's Shorty, and then in parentheses, You Keep Playing With My Mind by Imogen and featuring Keith Murray. And Seth, I think you're our resident R&B guy. You missed this one? This wasn't so, you?
Well, so here's the thing. Like, there's this... I was talking about R&B, but then to me, there was this other blend of like hip-hop and R&B that existed in the late 90s. And like... it was extremely hit or miss for me. Like some of it I loved, but there was so much of it that like was bad or I just didn't hear. And like, honestly, the R&B parts of the song, I didn't mind. The actual rap in this song,
brutal, dude,
is garbage, and it really turned me off.
You didn't think that Splitting Wigs and Reading Brains, and by Splitting Wigs and Reading Brains I mean Breaking It Down conversation style, you didn't think that was bars? That didn't blow your mind? Man, 90s hip-hop is a strange time, right? Because like, there's a lot of it I will love forever, right? Wu-Tang Clan forever, obviously. A Tribe Called Quest, they're the best. The Roots are great. But like, even some of the really good stuff, even some of like A Tribe Called Quest, a lot of that shit was corny as hell, right? Like, the Lowdown Theory is a great album. A lot of those songs are very, very corny. And hip-hop in general, like, it's kind of funny that it has this sort of like... or at least maybe it even did at the time, this sort of like lock up your kids, it's scary, it's urban black music, quote unquote, reputation, because so much of it was songs like this where it's just like, God, this is embarrassing. Like, I can't believe that they're like, I don't know, you at one point he's like, you tease me all the time. It's like, God, he says she's a player hater. I don't know. Yeah, I think that I prefer the R&B elements of this song, but even those are like really like, there was a time, or this time, it feels more so than any other time, that like these songs feel like they were written for children. Do you know what I mean? This song feels like it was supposed to, it's like, it's adult hip-hop R&B that is targeted toward a much younger demographic, kind of like Kidz Bop, like you said, Cody. But it's not a Kidz Bop song, it's just a song that is like kind of juvenile, I guess. What did you think of this one, Cody?
Short and sweet. I have no mileage with this song. I thought maybe it sounded familiar. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if I've heard every song on this album at least once, even though I know there were some songs that I never actually played from this particular CD. But like, I don't know. I can't be sure. Again, maybe a couple lines sounded familiar, but I don't know. That would just be me grasping at straws. Emily, was that kind of the case for you as well? Or do you have a richer history with this song than I do?
Yep, no notes on this one. I don't think I know this one either.
Well, perfect. That's great. We can move on. And now we've got Anytime by Brian McKnight, which is not a song that I really remember at all. Basically, my only note is, how do we have that much appetite for like these R&B like piano ballads? Because it's like, this is like, it sounds like every single other R&B song that is like both on this CD and was just out at the time. It was like hard for me to tell apart. It even sounded like it was the same tempo. What did you think of this one, Seth? Were you a fan?
I was a big fan.
Oh, hell yeah.
Brian McKnight, Anytime and Back at One. That was later in 1999. Huge fans of these songs. I have a lot of memories of like watching Cartoon Network late at night, or Disney Channel, or Nickelodeon, and they would start just playing infomercials once you got past like 3 a.m. And a lot of times they would play album compilations, and whenever they would play the R&B love song compilations, there would always be a Brian McKnight song featured. And honestly, I heard this song more there than on the radio. And to your point, I honestly think like I'm coming out big in defense of all of these like, yeah, emotion core R&B ballads. Like, this was before the internet, so we didn't have the information to research how exactly love felt. So we were just throwing everything at the wall to try to understand and express this feeling that we had inside. And if we want to get super like geopolitical, especially in America, like I think it was a lot easier because we didn't understand the implications of the internet and 9/11 hadn't happened yet. So like we were all in on being very, you know, hearts on our sleeves.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. It was like, it was Francis Fukuyama, end of history, right? It was like, well, we have resolved the geopolitical conflicts of our time. We have entered into the final stage of history in which neoliberalism wins, and everybody just gets to have their great suburban life now, and we can just ignore all women and minorities in other countries, and that's just true of us. And so, like, because of that, we are just going to spend our time thinking about what love is and trying to solve the real mysteries. And I think that that totally resonates with like a lot of the music that was happening at the time. Emily, what do you think about, I guess, both this song and like R&B in general of this time? Because this song to me sort of encapsulates like what it was all about, right?
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of like the slow piano ballads, which Brian McKnight was very much known for. So this sounds familiar in the sense of like there was a lot of piano ballads, but did not strike me in any way back then or now.
What do you got, Cody? Did you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, like literally maybe one. This is the last remaining song on the album that did not get a ton of spins from me, and like I don't have a ton of mileage with. When the line, you know, "Do I ever cross your mind?" like that in particular, it's like, I've definitely heard that before. Didn't really commit the song to memory as much. Back at one, though, a song that I have much more of a, or rather have had much more of a good time with, there we go, from childhood, played that a lot on, you know, various MP3 players, radios, things like that. But yeah, I don't know, I like the vibe well enough. I have basic opinions of late 90s R&B as the white fellow that I am, who grew up in southeastern Minnesota, but I like the sound of this well enough. This was fun to revisit.
Yeah, I think that's a good takeaway. And now we're moving on to something very, very different. Maybe, would you say, I mean, I guess other than the song that follows this one, maybe the most infamous song on this list. This is Aqua's Barbie Girl, a song that I feel none of us could have possibly missed this one, right? I mean, of all the songs to miss, Cody, let's go back to you. Did you say that you did give this one its fair share of spins?
Yeah, I think more so than I thinking back. I don't know if I heard this one as often on. I don't know if this was a radio hit or not. Presumably people heard it from somewhere. I definitely heard it from listening to Now That's What I Call Music Volume 1. And then I guess later reaffirming that by watching something like, you know, I Love the 90s on VH1. They definitely had their fun with this song. And, you know, it's simultaneously like very straightforward, but also very like could easily go over your head as a child. There's a lot of like, I don't know, weirdly suggestive elements at play. And I'm not choosing to think too much about any of those. But yeah, this song was pretty hard to miss. This is one of the handful where it's like, man, this is the 90s in a weird colored nutshell.
See, it always
covered in plastic.
Yeah, it always bothered me so much because she says she can beg on her knees, but Barbies don't have bendable knees. So what could she possibly be referring to there? I don't understand that lyric. Yeah, I mean, like, and like a funny thing about this song is they kept insisting it was cultural commentary. There was like a whole lawsuit about like Mattel sued them for defamation or whatever, and it spawned this immortal line where like Mattel sued them. They said it was, oh, it's a commentary song about like the materialism of culture. It's not about the Barbie toy. They won the lawsuit, then Aqua countersued them and was like, actually, Mattel, we're suing you for defamation. They also, the judge also threw that song or that court case out and said the immortal line, the parties are advised to chill. Like, a real judge said that to both of these plaintiffs, and I really love that. This is like a classic musical sort of like club and bop, I guess. It's written in C minor, which is really rad. The dude that plays Ken sounds like the most predatory human being who ever lived, which is kind of the main sort of commentary, I guess. Seth, what did you think of Barbie Girl?
Yeah, I think similarly, I heard it more in like middle school and high school dances than I did like when it came out. And I kind of looped it into that like bop, like I don't like this thing. But when I listened to it this time, it made me think of other early 90s like Euro dance songs, like Around the World and stuff like that. Which
it's like,
I really,
like straight
which I
really, up a Madonna backbeat in this song too.
And then what you said the thing about the knees thing, and I really quick, I'm like, when did Like a Prayer come out? Because that's what that's making me think of.
Right.
But yeah, I was surprised by like when I, this one, I actually did listen to the lyrics because I was like, all right, I'm not going to just like write this off. And I was like, oh, this, there kind of is a little subversive like theme here. I was surprised. I enjoy it.
Emily, did you have a relationship with Aqua's Barbie Girl?
Yeah, I especially remember the music video for this one. This is a legendary song. This is the song that stood out to me the most on this track list. The music video is great because it's the band Aqua dressed in like plasticky Barbie type outfits, and they look really creepy. And I remember seeing that back in the day. It's also like super pink and hyper feminized and stuff, like kind of a But I'm a Cheerleader lane of styling. But yeah, I remember seeing the music video and hearing this and being like, how are they doing this? Like, can they do this? Is this allowed? And then you described the whole Mattel lawsuit where the parties need to chill. But yeah, this is a great bop, I think. I think it's one of those pop songs that is an earworm because of how weird they're singing, which is a lot of weird songs from back then, but especially this. They're like singing in that weird type of voice that you know is just going to get stuck in your head. If they were singing it in any other way, I guess it might have not been as big of a smash hit. But yeah, this one I feel like would be in a club. You know, you'd find this in a gay bar still to this day. So shout out to Aqua.
Do you think it's going to be in the Greta Gerwig movie? It has to be, right? Like, if it's not, come on.
I think they've explicitly said it's not going to
what?
Be.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's messed up.
But, you know, there's, like, rumors, like, people are going to be like, Ken, as Ryan Gosling as Ken, is definitely going to say, like, come on, Barbie, let's go party.
Sure, they're gonna gesture at it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to find out. Now we're on to... I mean, do we even really need to talk about Karma Police by Radiohead? I was stunned that this made it, but like, I guess it that's right. It did come out at the time. I mean, I think that unfortunately, or if you know me very well, you probably know that like this was it for me. I was like, you know, this came out like it hit right at the time when I was starting to get into like, it came out well before I was getting into alt rock, but I was like that pretentious dude in middle school and high school who's trying to get really in music, and it was like Radiohead, hell yeah! And I mean, like, Karma, it rocks. This song's so good. it's extremely overplayed, obviously, but it has the best bridge of all time. It's got great lyrics about killing your boss and about hating capitalism and feeling alienated. It uses like all of these reverb and melting sort of like looping like things. The song like breaks down at the end as they continue to add more reverb and computer effects, which was kind of what that album was all about. And so I don't know. I mean, I just think that this is like the song of the album for me, hands down. And I don't think that's like controversial, but like it manages to be catchy in addition to everything else it's doing. And to me, it's just like, man, It turns out Radiohead was doing some interesting stuff, I guess. Huh. Cody, what did you think of Radiohead?
Well, at the time, as an elementary schooler or, you know, early middle schooler listening to this album, I was not big into Radiohead. And so this was a skip for me at the time. I really hit my stride with Radiohead come, you know, like high school, as
right,
you might expect. I went through my Radiohead, the intense portion of my Radiohead phase, just as, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who are like me in my circles have also done. Weird inclusion on this album, especially seeing how the Now CDs progressed over time. This is sort of a fascinating entry, you know, on a track list. But yeah, hey, Radiohead has representation on the Now CDs, and that's kind of cool.
Seth, what did you think of Radiohead, both then and later, I guess? I wasn't going to say now, but later.
Radiohead might be the largest blind spot in my music, education. I have never heard this song before. I think, sincerely, I only know Creep. I have never intentionally listened to Radiohead. I know that they're extremely well regarded, and I am not trying to blaspheme. I just my friends were never into it. I was never interested. My parents were never interested. So I had no avenue to approach it, and so I never did. So maybe my 30s will be the time for me to discover Thom Yorke. And,
you know, it's funny you say that, because right before we started recording, I was on Twitter and I saw somebody say that Radiohead has to be the number one dad rock band that's out right now. And I could see the sort of fabric of time in that moment. I never felt older, but I was like, oh, it's Radiohead and it's Weezer. Those are the two ultimate dad rock bands that are still around right now. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so old. Emily, were you a Radiohead person? I guess I don't know this about you.
I, for a really long time, fought being into Radiohead all the way through high school. Because I think they were such a big thing. They were a big thing for depressed teens, I guess, and I just fought being a part of that at all. But then I got into them in college when I was getting into a lot of music, and I do have a Radiohead shirt and stuff, so I really love a lot of their albums, but to be honest, not OK Computer quite as much as a lot of the other ones. But yeah, Carmel Police does not fit into this track list whatsoever, but it's
no, it's really weird to hear in the context of this album. That's crazy. Now we're going to follow up with something that maybe I think does fit a little bit better in this album, and maybe coming off of Radiohead really suffers for it, in my opinion. But we've got "I Will Buy You a New Life" by absolutely classic 90s rock band Everclear. And I think that this was probably something you listened to quite a bit, right, Cody?
Yeah, absolutely. I learned about them, not to just, you know, be just playing the same tape over and over, but from listening to Now CDs, Now 1, Now 2, Now 5, and Now 6. There might be others, but those all had Everclear tracks. I think my favorite probably, you know, when I was a youngin, being Wonderful from Now That's What I Call Music Volume 5. In any case, it definitely fits within this sort of meta of this track list, and also just I think what probably Now CDs in retrospect were doing, capturing this weird sort of glimpse of pop radio plus the slightly kind of deeper cuts. I never heard Everclear songs on the radio, I don't think, or at least not in my sort of local stations, but this feels weirdly emblematic of times and places that I occupied at you know, when I was younger, more than a lot of these tracks, except the sort of, you know, the standouts, the sort of generational, you know, I never was a big Spice Girls kid, but just saying Spice Girls is emblematic of the 90s more than most other things. But yeah, I don't know. That's a long-winded way of saying, yeah, the song really stood out then and stands out now.
Seth, did you have any relationship to Everclear?
No. Growing up, like, if it wasn't explicitly pop rock, you know, if it wasn't Counting Crows or like the Goo Goo Dolls or like Bare Naked Ladies or something like that, anything more alternative or harder than that or artistic than that, I had no exposure to. So I know the name Everclear. I think they have one of their songs featured in the Axis of Awesome Four Chords compilation. But this was the first time I heard the song. I did enjoy it.
Man, I this is such a non-pointed commentary, but like, it's so 90s. Like, both lyrically and musically, this song is like, it sits so comfortably in this CD in terms of sort of like, this is exactly what those bands sounded like that would play on like the adult contemporary stations or like the soft rock stations or the pop rock stations. It was like, I have really good memories of driving back home from the pool in New Hope. It was the big outdoor pool we used to go to, and we would still be in our swimming suits, and like the sun would be setting and my dad would be alternating between baseball games and songs like these, and we would just slowly be falling asleep because we were so warming up after being chilled by the water. And that, like, this song is like that for me, which makes it more sort of like nostalgic than I would think it would be, because it's like kind of a nice guy song, like Why Don't Girls Like Me. But, you know, that was also kind of what the 90s was about, was the sort of like lack of receiving of the emotion that was being put out. Emily, do you remember Everclear at all, or this song?
Yeah, I remember Everclear. I remember his voice. And I don't know if I have a specific memory to this song, but I just want to say it makes me think of the Shrek soundtracks, and I feel like it would have fit really well on any of those.
Wow, that's a really good point. You're totally right. Now we're on to our second to last track, and this one is Fly Away by Lenny Kravitz. Who wants to start with this one? Cody, do you have a whole lot to say about old Lenny?
Not a lot to say other than, I mean, this is a definitive 90s classic. Lenny Kravitz, his voice was pervasive throughout, I mean, this entire stretch of, you know, like 5-7 odd years. He makes a lot of future appearances on the now albums, you know, these compilations. kind of unfair that we started out with this one, but hey, great for us as listeners, and kind of having this tracklist placement always was a sort of weird, or not a weird thing, but just like something I thought a lot about. Having this as the second to last track, I thought was kind of fascinating, just because it seems like, I don't know, maybe better geared, maybe not for the beginning, but sort of towards the middle to like kind of boost you back up if you're listening to them all back to back to back. But that not a conversation we need to have right now. But yeah, this song rips. I mean, am I wrong, Seth? Does this song not rip?
You are absolutely right. I do have a lot of memories of this song. There are like really weird notable exceptions in like the rock music that did sort of penetrate my musical knowledge, and Lenny Kravitz was one of them. And yeah, like, it's just so groovy. I love just like putting it on, yeah, and doing my best like jellyfish impersonation. A lot of fun.
That's funny, because like, there's nothing wrong with this song. It's basic. He says yeah a lot. It's fine. It's a pump up. I despise this song simply because you could not escape it in 1998, 1999, 2000. It was like literally everywhere. You would go into a store and it would be playing. You would go out, you would go into a different store, a different radio station would be playing it, and you would hear it again. You would get in your car to go home, you would toggle the stations, and every single station would be playing this song. I associate it with Dragon Ball Z because I was really into Dragon Ball Z, and the song is about flying away at the time. So that's a nice memory. Again, just like, he says yeah so much in this song, and he like screams it. That's very memorable to me. That's about all I can't, even listening to it now, I'm like, I've heard this song so much more than I'll ever hear the music that I love. And there's something deeply frustrating about that. Emily, Do you remember this song?
Oh, yeah, of course. Lenny was all over the radio, like you said, and he managed to be so hot, yet so cheesy and so whiny in all the songs that I really, really did not like his music, but would watch the music videos. And, yeah, shout out to the Kravitz family.
Yeah, I mean, and then he gave us Zoe Kravitz, which is sort of the best of Lenny Kravitz without the cheesy elements. Sorry, Cody, you know I had to say something.
That was just a really weird phrasing of that, but whatever, continue. We're near the end, I'm broken.
We're on the last track, yeah, and the last track is Sex and Candy by Marcy Playground, another very memorable 90s track, I think. It's just the sort of classic, low-energy knockoff Nirvana. For me, this song was kind of a refresher because it's like 2.5 minutes long and it really goes nowhere. It just does the one thing that it's doing, which, like, the chorus is nice. I think it resolves in a really boring way, but it really seemed like this song was like a classic 90s one trick where it was like, oh, the whole thing about this is just that, like, Sex and Candy is a fun, evocative, and sort of subversive phrase that's going to make people go, ooh. And that's about all that's going on in this song. So I don't know. I think it kind of is a bit of a sputter out for Now That's What I Call Music Volume 1. But, you know, that chorus is very memorable. What do you guys think? Cody, what did you like this one?
Yeah, I mean, I like it at least because I listened to it a lot and it has shaped, you know, part of the backbone of, you know, my youth as a music listener. But definitely kind of maybe a weird song to play on Rochester pop radio in the late 90s. So I think this was another one that I heard just by virtue of listening to this CD so much. It is, in retrospect, a weird wet fart to end on, right? Just such a kind of like downtrodden, ho-hum, Sex and Candy, the end. Kind of strange, but whatever. It works. It's, I don't know, rose-tinted glasses syndrome, if anything else. But yeah, whatever. It's fine.
Yeah, I just like it. It sort of like reminds me of Her Majesty at the end of Abbey Road, where it's just like this weird little perfunctory, almost miss song, where it's just like, oh yeah, it's just like a palate cleanser almost. It's just so like sort of low beat and just sort of like, okay, we're playing you out now. Seth, what did you think of this one?
I want you to clip that because I'm sure you'll get all kinds of engagement for smirching Abbey Road in any way. I don't actually feel that way, but I'm sure the internet does. No, this was a song, actually, I didn't realize it was Marcy Playground. There was like a, you know, Sublime, Incubus, Red Hot Chili Peppers. Like, if you were to group any of that, like, yeah, we really love California and weed and chillin' and vibes. Like, there was a morass of music there. So I know that I've heard this song, but I was just like, oh yeah, this is one of those songs where, yeah, you put it on after partying. Yeah, and it is like a palate cleanser. Like, it's just on. It's just there.
Yeah, it's just like the come down song. Almost.
Yeah, exactly. That's
Emily, what did you think of Cigarettes and Candy? Or Cigarettes and Candy, Sex and Candy. I was thinking of a bunch of different and songs.
Yeah, I want to back up because you compared this song on this compilation CD to a song on the end of an actual album by the Beatles, Abbey Road. So I don't, what the hell was, what?
Called it.
I mean, you love Her Majesty. That's your favorite. That's your favorite Beatles song. Is that like minute long song at the end of Abbey Road where he's just like, and that's it. And then like the album's over.
What I wanted to say is that I don't understand the comparison at all because it's we're talking about a compilation CD from the 90s, right? And that would be an album, a proper album. Like Her Majesty just fine, but it's this song I don't remember. I looked up the music video and it is bizarre. It's like a very green, everything's green, and there's a big giant spider walking around. So it doesn't even the vibe you would think that might be in the music video from the song, and the title of it is not. It's like weird, ominous green and black emo with a spider crawling. So yeah, I don't like the song, and but I like Her Majesty from the Beatles album Abbey Road just fine.
I'm so glad that you guys like that song so much. Did not think that the Beatles needed to be defended quite so staunchly, but I understand. Jason's really getting my ass in the comments as well. So, all right, now that we're done, congratulations. We made it all the way through. Now that's what I call music. What was everybody's favorite song and least favorite song on this particular album? I think that mine are probably pretty obvious. My favorite was Karma Police. My least favorite was Zoot Suit Riot by the Cherry Pop and Daddies. All in all, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed listening to this. I kind of really thought that this was going to be sort of cringy to listen back through in the sort of way that listening to music from your childhood often is. But instead, I think I was really taken aback by just how sort of like we had said, earnest and maudlin and sort of like parsable the emotions were here. There wasn't a lot of irony in the 90s, and it kind of made for like, in a weird way, like it makes me sound like a real boomer to say this, but like it was a simpler time, I guess. You know, like I just think that like it's wild to hear these songs that are so clear about being what they're about, and what they're about are feelings and emotions and being in love or being angry, and there's no sort of like disaffectation or guardedness about it. So that was really interesting. And maybe an interesting sort of like corollary to Hey Arnold, right? Like maybe there was, the show was more palatable back then because we were more capable of digesting earnestness or something. Right. Cody, what did you think? What was your favorite and least favorite? And what did you think about the album overall?
Sure. I think gauging most favorite track to just for my own assessment purposes to mean the song that I'd be most likely to like revisit or least likely to skip if it were to come up on shuffle on, you know, my iPod, again, RIP. And that would be Fastball's The Way, not by any means like the best song on the album more than likely, but probably the one that means the most to me. And least favorite would be Hanson's Mbop. And I listened to Now CDs a ton growing up. I think the fact that I listened to them so often, you know, so frequently has led to my inability on most occasions, or just, you know, my preference would be to like listen to singles. Rarely do I listen to albums all the way through. I'm trying to get better at that, unless it's something like previously mentioned band The National. By and large, I'm not going to be listening to albums all the way through. But again, I'm trying to get better at that. But for better and for worse, the Now CDs and 90s music played a very big role in my upbringing and informs the type of 20-something that I am today. I can't say that anymore. Emily, what do you think about this album and maybe your most favorite and least favorite tracks?
Yeah, so I didn't know Now CDs until the Now CD 4. I had now that's what I call Music Volume 4, 5, and 6, and then like skip to 8, I think. So I got a lot of play out of all of those pop songs, but Now 1 and The First Few Miss Me. But as far as this track list goes, I most enjoy probably the Spice Girls' Say You'll Be There, Still a Bop, Still Would Love to Hear It in Any Bar or Club. And then I'd maybe say Tonics, If You Could Only See, the whiny boy voice song, is my least favorite.
All right, Seth, bring us home. What did you think about this? And just sort of your experience re-listening to this. What did it feel like?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Just for the record, I went back just to confirm. I got into Now with Now Volume 3, started with All Star by Smash Mouth. So really coming out of the gate strong. But for this, I really thought about, Cody, the way you phrased it, like, what would I be least likely to skip if it came up again? And it really is like, depending on my mood, it is either As Long As You Love Me or All My Life by Casey and JoJo. Both of those would be like sing in the car classics. And then I think my least favorite, honestly, was Shorty, because like it was the most nondescript, like it got nothing out of me. Even Mbop, like I have to feel something when I listen to it. Shorty, I was just like, man, this is just bad. Like, this is unenjoyable. I just want this to be over. It was a lot of fun to go back. I agree. Like, it's interesting to see how music has changed and going back to that mindset of the 90s. So it was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on, Seth. That was so much fun. And hopefully our sort of, now that we're all sort of in the 90s mode, we'll move forward into season 4 with that mindset, just keeping in mind that as we were watching Hey Arnold and listening to Hey Arnold's great jazz music, this was the kind of thing that we would leave our homes and go out and listen to on the radio, or perhaps in our gym classes or our sock hops or what have you. And I'm being very, there were sock hops at my school. I'm not joking. We literally called them that. And it was a lot of music like this. So you can look at me like that all you want, Cody. But thanks so much, everybody. I think that's just about it, right, Cody?
Yeah, just about. Thank you very much, Harry, for orchestrating this musically inclined episode. And thank you, Seth, for joining us today. If you would please remind us where people can find you online.
You can find me online, on Twitter or Instagram, at SN Zarati.
That's freaking right. And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in to this very special episode of Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. If my recollection of our schedule is correct, this will be our final entry for the season 3 slate. Be on the lookout next week for an announcement about our season 4 premiere. Until then, two things. Number one, if you're able to, please give your time, money, and or attention toward abortion rights organizations and efforts. If you're not sure where to look, we've posted some links over the last few weeks on our accounts, which leads us to the far less important second point, which is you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod, and that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
I'm a Barbie girl, and you can find me at A Barbie World.
Oh, lovely. Be safe, be respectful, be bold. Thanks, everyone.